All right, so good morning, everyone. My mind is just racing with all of the things that I just heard in the previous presentation and thinking about the overlaps and the different possible directions that we could take this study now, but I'll present what we've done so far, and then we can talk in the future, and I definitely plan to talk with these ladies more about different ways of conceptualizing fidelity. But today I'm going to be talking about a study that my team and I, one of my team members, David Polio, is in the audience here, that we conducted to conduct a fidelity assessment of the transition to Housing First in the VA. So I have no financial disclosures to make, although I do need to note that this study was funded by a grant from the VA. But of course, the results that I'll be sharing today are the opinions of the research team and do not reflect the views of the Department of Veterans Affairs. So just by way of a little bit of background, this is information we've talked about already. In 2009, the effort to end veteran homelessness really came to national prominence. This was something that was advanced by President Obama and a former Secretary Shinseki. Also, this was one of his three main goals for the VA, was to end veteran homelessness, hopefully by 2015, and that's something that we're still working toward. And at that time, there were tons of additional resources poured into trying to end veteran homelessness, most notably through the HUD-VASH voucher program. HUD-VASH is a collaboration between the Department of Housing and Urban Development. They provide the funds for housing vouchers directly to public housing authorities. And then VA's supportive housing teams select veterans for participation in the program and provide supportive services to get people housed and stable and remain in housing. And in 2011, VA formally adopted, through a directive coming from one of the undersecretaries, formally adopted Housing First as its approach for running the HUD-VASH program. So they declared that there would be a shift away from the traditional treatment-based, stepped approach to providing housing to using this Housing First approach. And at that same time, our study, the HSALT study, was funded to examine this transition and this adoption of Housing First in the VA. So we conducted a four-year-long mixed method study. It was longitudinal. And our goal was really to understand the particular type or flavor of Housing First that was going to be implemented in the VA. So our goal was to develop a fidelity assessment that reflected the way that Housing First was implemented in the VA. So we did a lot of background research at the very beginning. We conducted several expert panels where we did focus groups with both VA homeless leadership and also other national policy experts on housing homeless individuals. And we also did a site visit to Pathways Housing First in New York, Samson Barris's model program. And on the basis of that, and of course drawing on Todd Gilmer's fidelity assessment as well and other fidelity measures, we developed a fidelity tool that was specific to what we expected implementation of Housing First to look like in the VA. We then did baseline visits to eight different VAs in 2012 and 2013, and then we went back a year later and did follow-up visits at those same VAs in 2013 and 14. And at each of those VAs that we selected throughout the country, we interviewed people from all different levels at VA. So we interviewed the facility director, the hospital director. We interviewed mid-level program managers, case managers working on the front line with veterans. In many cases, we also interviewed community partners and other people within each VA facility that had some interplay with the Housing First program. And what we did was, that was all qualitative interviews that we did, and at the end of each site visit, we would develop a very, very detailed, very long narrative of all of the aspects of Housing First that we saw implemented at each of those VAs. And we were particularly concerned with the challenges that VAs were facing and some of the innovative approaches that they were taking. And then, after we developed that narrative for each of our site visits, we used our Fidelity scoring instrument to assign, through consensus scoring, to assign scores to 20 different criteria related to Housing First implementation. And we sorted those criteria into 5 different domains. And, of course, they're different than your 5 different domains because it's specific to the VA. There's a lot of overlap. But we'll look at those domains in a moment. All right, so as I said, our particular goal here was to try to understand what Housing First adoption would look like in a complex organization such as the VA. We know that other large-scale implementations of Housing First are also going on, and so we wanted to provide some insight into what Housing First implementation would look like in a very complex organization. What I want to present to you today are some specific results to address these general questions of which aspects of Housing First seem to me more easily attained, which were the ones on which the VA was successful in being able to implement, and then which aspects of Housing First prove harder to implement. And you can see already the overlap between what we're doing here and what the previous presenters talked about. How we're going to do that is by looking at a comparison of the fidelity scores on these different domains at baseline and at follow-up so that we have a sense of how things changed from the very beginning of implementation when we went to visit sites in 2011 and 12 through to when we went back a year later. All right, so this is our first set of results. Here you see the 5 different domains that we were assessing. And already, just on the basis of this, you can see that there are definite differences by domain in terms of implementation. Looking at the far left set of bars, is that the left? Yes, the far left set of bars, that's the domain related to no preconditions, this idea that individuals should be housed without any requirement for sobriety or treatment participation. And we saw that this domain was fairly high at baseline and then was even higher at follow-up. And we'll talk a bit more about this in a moment, what we saw with regard to this domain. Rapid placement into permanent housing was similarly quite high both at baseline and at follow-up. So this was a domain on which the VA was fairly successful. Same with prioritization of the most vulnerable homeless veterans for housing. Then over on the right side, we start to see those domains in which there was a little more difficulty. These were domains that had lower overall scores at both baseline and at follow-up, particularly the availability of comprehensive support services seemed to be a domain that VAs were struggling to meet. And then lastly, this notion of a modern recovery philosophy. Housing First takes the approach that homelessness is a condition from which individuals can recover. And this is very much based on the idea of veteran-centered recovery, figuring out what veterans are trying to achieve and helping them set goals to achieve recovery, whatever it means for them. And so we saw that this was also one that most of our sites seem to struggle a bit with. All right, so what I want to look at now are the specific domains. This first one is unique because there's only one criterion in this domain. It's the criterion of no preconditions related to sobriety or treatment participation. What you'll see here is that for each of the 8 sites that we visited, we have calculated whether sites improved from baseline to follow-up, that's the green, whether they stayed the same, that's gray, or whether they declined. So for each of these, we're going to see a pie. I was so excited. This was a great opportunity to use pie graphs. Those don't come along that frequently, but this, because it's out of a proportion of 8, this actually makes sense. So we can see for each of these domains the different proportion of sites that that improved or stayed the same. And so here, for this first domain of no preconditions, we see that there was a great deal of improvement, or the one high piece where they actually stayed at the highest possible fidelity score of 4 from baseline to follow-up. And so what we saw at the VAs that we studied was that acceptance of this idea that veterans should be housed without any preconditions was widely accepted. At baseline, there was still some concern about, well, if you put people into housing and they're not ready, they may come out of housing. But by follow-up, this was a belief that was widely expressed across all of the VAs that we examined. And I thought that was, this is a pretty radical belief about housing individuals, and I personally was somewhat surprised that this was so widely endorsed across all of the different VAs that we examined. So looking now at our second domain, this is the rapid placement into permanent housing domain, and you can see that this is made up of several different criteria. We're obviously not going to talk about each pie piece individually, but I did want to just highlight some of those things that continue to be an issue for the VAs that we studied. In particular, time to housing is something that many of our sites still were struggling with. At baseline, we saw time to housing running about 2 to 3 months from the time that a veteran was identified as being interested in a HUD-VASH voucher to the time that they were actually housed. And by follow-up, at most sites, it was still about 2 to 3 months. And one of the things that we noticed was that in some ways this seemed to be outside of the control of VAs. Certainly the housing markets in the local communities were hugely influential in terms of how long it was taking veterans to get housed. And we also saw that this aspect in particular is very dependent on coordination with the local public housing authorities. And so we did see instances in which particular VAs had worked very intensively with their local public housing authority and sometimes even brought in HUD to tell the local housing authority, okay, housing homeless veterans is a priority. You can flex the rules in this way. You can skip these following steps, and really gave different PHAs and empowered them to be able to help the local VAs house veterans more rapidly. Here we're looking at prioritization of the most vulnerable veterans, and we've got several different groups that we could prioritize. Across the board, we saw that prioritization, the idea that we're selecting those veterans most in need of housing for participation in the HUD-VASH program, was also something that was pretty widely accepted and endorsed across each of the VAs that we studied. In particular, the VA National was very much emphasizing housing chronically homeless veterans according to the federal definition. And so there was a big emphasis on housing finding and housing chronically homeless veterans. There was also a big push on housing other groups of veterans, like women and families with children and veterans from recent conflicts. And so what we saw was that there was a little bit of sort of, well, everyone's vulnerable, everyone is prioritized. And so in the cases where there wasn't a great deal of improvement, it was because they were already prioritizing everyone for placement into housing. Here, when we look at sufficient support services, we can see that this was something, a domain which, in which many of the VAs that we looked at struggled. This is indicated by the many more slices of pie that are in the pink region here. Thank you. So in general, the provision of supportive services was something that the sites in our study just really continue to struggle with. And I think the key to all of this is the case management loads. The Housing First program in VA was intended to have caseloads of 25-1 for case managers. And I can say that none of the VAs that we looked at had case management ratios of 25-1. We were seeing more commonly 35, 40. One site we looked at even had a case management load of about 60-1. And so you can imagine all of these other specific types of supportive services, things like being able to do routine monthly meetings with veterans, being able to increase services in times of crisis, are really severely limited by the incredibly high caseloads that we were that we saw the VAs experiencing. And then lastly, looking at this criterion of modern recovery philosophy, this really, again, sort of piggybacks on the idea of supportive services. So much of supporting this modern recovery philosophy that's very, very veteran-centered and focused on goal setting and sort of continuous negotiation of goals is very much dependent on case managers having the time to spend with veterans, to work on that sort of goal setting, and to use intensive therapeutic techniques like motivational interviewing. We saw across the board that most of the places we visited just did not have the capacity to be able to spend that kind of time. There was an initial goal setting process that was a worksheet that was filled out with a veteran at intake into the program, at which they sort of ticked off those goals that they wished to meet through the program. But the ongoing clinical negotiation of goals was something that there just simply was not the capacity to be able to do in the current implementation of Housing First. So to wrap up, of course, there's limitations of this study. This was based on qualitative assessment, as we said, of 8 sites. And although those 8 sites were selected to be representative of sites throughout the United States, in the end, it was 8. But certainly, we did see a lot of diversity at those 8 sites. We saw a wide range of different practices and different, you know, levels of implementation. So I do think that we got a very nice picture of Housing First implementation in the VA. And of course, the VA itself is very distinctive. I mean, it is a complex bureaucracy that has all sorts of rules that govern how it works. And we saw in some cases that, you know, that's a benefit, because when the VA says you do Housing First, everyone said, okay, we're doing Housing First now. And so there was, you know, immediate adoption, because that's how the organization works. But the extent to which that adoption was what you would call, what was it? Not scope, but the other one, the quality, whether that, you know, that is a question that remains to be seen. But I do think that this study of what it looks like to implement Housing First from a sort of top-down approach in a large organization has so many implications for implementation for other large-scale organizations that are considering adopting Housing First. So just a quick review of the lessons for implementation. We did see that organizations can successfully be reoriented to a Housing First approach. As I said, the acceptance of the philosophy, or at least the ability to tell us the philosophy of Housing First, was certainly widespread. Some aspects of Housing First implementation seem to really require coordination with outside partners, and this is something that needs to be taken into consideration. It's not enough for an entity itself to decide that they're going to start using Housing First approach. They have to have ways of engaging community partners to meet the same sorts of goals. We saw this in particular with regard to getting the public housing authorities on board in terms of timing and the exceptions that they would make for housing homeless veterans. Of course, the providing clinical support just requires so many resources, just way more resources than I think the system really realized that it would need to provide. Certainly additional staff to reduce caseloads and to allow that intensification of services is something that is just, I mean, it goes without saying that there's a need for additional staff, and particularly multidisciplinary staff, in order to truly meet this intention of Housing First, to be able to provide within a single team all of the different types of comprehensive supports that individuals need in order to successfully maintain their housing. And then also time is a huge resource that I think gets overlooked. Time for staff training. So, you know, certainly those that are planning to implement the SOAR program, things like that. There's so many other things that could potentially help to enhance Housing First implementation, whether it's training in motivational interviewing, additional training in CBT. There's so many other clinical support services that could be provided, and there's just no time for that additional training. And even for the time that is spent with veterans in terms of really intensive clinical work on things like goal setting. And so the final take-home message of all of this, rather self-evident, some aspects of Housing First are just more easily attained than others, and this is something that needs to be considered for any program that's considering implementing Housing First. Thanks. Because we got such in-depth insight from each of the sites, one of the agreements that we made with the sites themselves was that their identities would be protected, because obviously there were things that they revealed to us about how VA Central Office was requiring things and stuff that in order for them to be able to speak freely, we had to guarantee anonymity. I can say that they were distributed throughout the country, okay. So we had two in each region, and we also selected them on the basis of the number of vouchers that they managed. So we wanted sites of similar sizes so that we weren't comparing, you know, a huge site to one that had five vouchers.
Okay.
So they were balanced in some way.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I have a question. So this relates to sessions on health policy. I just wanted to ask a question. And what role does the Institute of Medicine play in homelessness and health? If you can just speak to that.
So the Institute of Medicine actually published in 1988 kind of a definitive volume on homeless populations, in essence. It just sort of talked about who's homeless, why they're homeless, so on and so forth. And since then, I went and done nothing until I started this project with my colleague, Jen. And I forgot to say, we got a little bit of funding for this project from Gates and the Conrad Hilton Foundation. I am trying to put together a much larger project looking at aspects of Housing First and other models, but I'm currently fundraising for it, so. Thank you for asking that.
Yeah.
Does anybody know if anybody really rich?
I know, I was just curious because I went to the National Prevention General Meeting last night, so it was very interesting to hear about the different roles that the different entities play.
Mm-hmm.
Do we have any other questions?
Yeah, I was wondering, when it came to the scope and fit conversation, if you looked at all, if any of those different components had an element of client choice. So something I'm from Oregon, and we're working with a Black Women at Home Concern, especially through a study on how client fit with the model may impact outcomes there. Was there an element of
SOAR guideline, who is meant to implement it?
Sure, that's a great question. Everybody? so with the guidelines, they're from the VA specifically, are being rolled out to all VA social workers, so which about 4,000 people. Do we expect all of them to implement this? No. I would say those who have caseloads, if you could identify one or two veterans to serve with that, the results can just be astounding. We certainly wouldn't want them to use to help, you know, all 40 people on their caseload access Social Security benefits, also because those 40 people probably are not all eligible for this. I probably should have emphasized this is only for those who meet the criteria for Social Security benefits. It is absolutely not our intention to get everybody on Social Security. The thing is, it's such a, yeah, really should start with that. But because not everybody's gonna qualify, we wanna help those people who already qualify, just need help going from A to Z. And so, you know, if all of those, you know, if even half, you know, say 2,000 caseworkers did one application, 2,000 individuals being helped with this with greater income stability would be perfect. So I would really take it in whatever degree we can get it, and we'll build from there.
So I'll have kind of a broader question that everybody will win. Each of you talked about the programs you're studying, working with community services, and needing to break down some of those barriers. So we don't see kind of the traditional model. Here's our contract, this is the scope of work, this is what you're in charge of, this is what we're in charge of. But each of you also touched on some kind of best practice, either a barrier or a recommendation. What do you see as those best practices specifically as far as kind of reinventing the field when it comes to working with your partners and incentives?
I can start. One of the things that we observed that, and it was never entirely clear if this was something that VA National encouraged local VA to do or if it was something that grew organically, I think we actually saw examples of both, was to have like day-long boot camps with community agencies where they sat down and figured out, you know, what are the resources that you can provide, what do we provide, let's figure out what are the contributions that each of us is making here, and just formalizing that that process as part of the transition to Housing First. One of the things that facility directors at different VAs were required to do was to make a community contact with either with PHA or with some entity within the community, or the SSBF grantee, or someone in the community, and figure out how they could better partner. And so there was some sort of push toward developing that, and the useful thing we saw was this kind of boot camp model where everyone came together for one day and they all got to know each other. Yeah, so that's one best practice that we observed.
Then I would say that what came up over and over was the importance of integrating medical care with behavioral health care. So really the addiction, mental health piece, and really bringing that into the health services arena. Yeah.
For SOAR and Social Security, a lot of what we do is very similar to the boot camps. To some degree, bringing all the stakeholders to the table and saying, how is everybody going to help with this process? Because, I mean, at the end of the day, a lot of us are seeing the same people, and we're all serving them in our own little ways. And if we say, okay, let's come together, maybe similar to, you know, with veteran homelessness, developing those master lists. Who is experiencing homelessness? Okay, who works with John? And gathering that so we're not, everybody can bring the information to the table. And through SOAR, we work with communities pretty intensely to help them develop a process of communication, because I think it's most helpful when it's written down of who is doing what, how are we filing applications, and that's a service that the Technical Assistance Center that I work at provides for communities.
I have a question for the Housing First
yet. I heard all of us murmur.
Right, no, that's my friend is like, this isn't coming first, but I mean, it's a model, it's not like you're required to do these things, but this is the ideal, and they're just not including that ideal. That's not. I don't know if there were lessons learned, like maybe they need better work on goal setting, or maybe they are lacking sort of staff support. They can work on sort of stuff like.
I think one thing we observed was that it matters a lot who is saying we are going to have a no preconditions policy. One thing that we noticed at baseline was that many of the case managers said, we've been told there's no preconditions. We accept everyone. But I know that people who are using are going to fall out of housing. So, and there was this tension. And, you know, by follow-up, people were more able to say, we've decided that we're not going to have any preconditions, and that's how we're working it, and we're going to deal with those contingencies of when people are using and whatever may come. But I think it sounds like in that organization there's not a shared belief that no preconditions is fundamental to what it means to do housing first. And so whether it's coming from case managers saying, well, I'm going to use a precondition. When I have people, I'm going to say they have to have a treatment plan because I know that that's important, or whether that's something that's coming from top down.
Top down, and I'm wondering if in regards to the fit,
not just
like a political fit issue.
Yeah, it was just thinking, you know, we did the example, I mean, that sounds even maybe more like cultural fit, right, where maybe the idea of having a pre-existing thing or allowing clients to set their own goals is a value of the program.
Yeah.
And like you said, I think that is a top-down issue. We did see similar things to that, although maybe not as
Right. Well, and I think it points to the importance of actually measuring fidelity. Like, evidence and practices are not supposed to be saying ambiguous things. They kind of pick and choose what forms of women you're implementing, and for them to actually realize the intended benefits, you do have to be clear about what those core components are and are you actually doing this. So I'm wondering if they have any kind of fidelity monitoring in place, or if they have articulated within the organization what the components of housing first actually are.
Yeah, I was texting my friend while we were all bringing your notes.
I'm not sure if it's like written out explicitly each question, but you can get an idea of what the item at least looked at from that.
And you guys use, I mean, almost exactly the same.
Yeah, I mean, exactly.
Well, thank you, presenters. I have one announcement. Well, two, three. Molly is back there with sign-in sheet for the caucus membership, so please sign in with Molly. Also, our social hour is tonight from 8 to 9:30 at the Scout Waterhouse and Kitchen. It's also serving as a fundraiser for apartment adoption for the Apartment Adoption Project, which is based here in Chicago. Our goal is to it provides funding for housing homeless youth. So our goal is to raise $750 collectively, which will house a youth for 1 month in a studio apartment. So I have flyers here for both separately for the fundraiser and for the social hour. I also have a flyer that has both of them, so if you want to think about it, I'm not collecting any information to donate right now, just as far as like credit cards or anything. don't give that to me. Just write down your name and your email address at the bottom and tear it off and hand it to me, and I'll send you a follow-up email on how you can make those donations. It is tax deductible, so.
And if you do make a donation, we're accepting cash.